Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans. It is a privilege to be with you another week. I sincerely mean that. All of us need that extra push, that extra bit of encouragement to know that what God puts in us can come to pass. We can see that dream, that vision happen despite the many challenges and difficulties that life often throws our way. And so tonight we're going to continue to explore that. Our guest tonight is Charita Cadenhead. She is actually an author as well as many other things. She's known as the Exit Strategist. And we're going to be talking to her tonight about this wonderful book that she put out for women, by women, about women, and about looking at this concept about being your authentic self. And she didn't get there just by chance. She had to go through her own process, her own journey of finding her way, and she's going to share that with us tonight. She's a certified life coach and the founder of Renew, Refresh, and Reset Your Life. I love that title. It's a lot like the title to my book, Don't Give Up and Win, a survival guide to renewed virginity, because you want to be refreshed. You want to take on whatever you're going to pursue in your life as being completely renewable. And so welcome to the show, Charita. So glad to finally talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Well, I am perfectly fine, and I'm excited to see what we're going to uncover and discover as we chat with each other today.
Very good. Very good.
I was just laying out a few things from your bio, and, of course, the person that you are today, you have many titles. You don't just have one or two. You've
right.
got a couple of titles behind your name. And, you know, people look at that and they think that's who you always were, and you just magically arrived to this place one day and everything in life just, you know, set out and moved smoothly for you. But as we know very well, that's not how life works, right?
It
have to go through
a process not my life.
Of getting through it. Not your life. So take us back. I want to know, you know, one of the things that you shared in terms of wanting to even write the book, and we'll get to the book in a little bit, but just to start off with you, and we all do these things out of a sense of motivation, a personal sense of motivation. I decided to start Don't Give Up Radio Show because of a need that I had that I didn't see outside in the world. So I said, well, I guess I'll have to produce it myself. And so here
right.
you are. You came up and you produced this best-selling book, by the way. What was it about your life, about what you call a dark period in your life? Can you explain to us what that period was?
Well, you know, I had suffered from depression, and I was diagnosed with depression in early 2000, although I had been depressed probably for at least a couple, maybe even 3 years prior to that. And, of course, not knowing what it was, I didn't know why I was so sad all the time and just, you know, beyond a bad day. This was like a 3-year bad day for me. Turned out to be a 5-year bad day, but I didn't know what was going on with me. And then, you know, I started seeking help, you know, doctors, counseling, psychologists, psychiatrists, medication. And so I was diagnosed with depression, and so that's where my story sort of began.
Let's slow it down a little bit because, you know, I had a guest on earlier in the month, and, you know, she was explaining one of the mistakes that people make in our culture because of the way we multitask words, like the word
mm-hmm.
love. You know, we
mm-hmm.
love our cat and we love God. You
mm-hmm.
know, we use the same
mm-hmm.
words to
mm-hmm.
love things. And so what people tend to misunderstand when you talk about depression, they
mm-hmm.
think that you're saying you feel sad, basically, or you're having a down day, as opposed to what you just mentioned, which is 3 years of a bad day. It's
right.
a continual
right.
chronic cycle. Describe for us, what would a bad day look like for you? What if I was looking at you from the outside, what would I see?
Mm-hmm.
And from the inside, what were you feeling?
Well, you know, at the time that I really recognized that I needed help was, you know, I remember my daughter, she was she was not quite in high school yet. And I can remember, you know, during time when she was a young child, one of the things I used to love to do was get up in the morning and open every blind in my house and let all the sunshine in. You know, I mean, that was my thing. It just meant, you know, my day was starting. I had this beautiful picture window, and I could, you know, my house kind of set up high, and I could look low. And, you know, I realized that I was in trouble when I would get up in the morning, I would take my daughter to school, and I would come home, and I would lay in that dark house until it was time to get her again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I probably did this for weeks, okay, before I realized, okay, I've got to do something. This is really bad.
Talk to me about your crossroad moment, the moment in time where you thought, God, you know, or life, wherever you were at that moment,
mm-hmm.
I could just throw in the towel right now. None of this is working. I've done all I can do. I just want to give up. And you didn't. Talk to us about that moment in time.
During that time, I began to think that I didn't want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as if depression weren't bad enough, when you start having thoughts of thinking that you don't want to live, and then they start turning into thoughts of suicide, you know, you're either going to follow through with it, you're going to continue to think like that, or you're going to do it. And so I started, you know, I didn't really want to kill myself. I just didn't know what else to do. I didn't think about things like, you know, putting a gun to my head, slitting my wrist or anything like that. But I had medications in the house. And so I decided one day, you know, while I had taken my daughter to school, you know, I'm going to go in my medicine cabinet in my bathroom, and I'm flushing everything because I don't want to be tempted to take any of this. I don't want to do this. I'm a throw it away. I'm thinking bad too often for too long. I'm going to get rid of anything in here that will harm me. And so I did. I flushed everything down the toilet. 2000, when I decided to flush that medicine down the toilet, I called my mother and asked her, could I come home? I was living in Alabama at the time, and I asked her, could I come home to Detroit? I didn't tell her, but that was my effort to save my life. And so though that's what my days were like. They were dark and they were gloomy. And, you know, once I got in that mode to where I just didn't want to leave the house, they didn't get better. They didn't really get better until, you know, I started seeking out help with doctors. And, you know,
right.
I didn't felt like they really got it.
I even want to go back a little more, because when you hear these things, the average person who's trying to wrap their head around it, they're trying to understand
mm-hmm.
this thing,
mm-hmm.
did something traumatic happen, right? Was this suppressed? Was this post-traumatic? Was it, you know, so they're trying to figure it out in the natural.
Yeah.
And by the way, sometimes there is no reasoning. Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah,
it can be chemical,
exactly.
Hormone shifts in the body. And sometimes
exactly.
it is delayed trauma. Was it delayed
mm-hmm.
trauma for you?
It was not. It was not delayed trauma.
Okay.
And I didn't realize this for a while later, but I had been, at that time, I had probably been making a living without a job for about 9 years. And
mm-hmm.
I was never able to, I had left a stable job and came for 9 years. I made a living without a job. and was always able to support myself and my daughter, but I was trying to be in business for myself, and everything I tried just was not working, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the last straw in that, I mean, I sold insurance. I was a distributor for a hair care product line, which, you know, the money was pretty good, but there was, you know, it was ups and downs. When you're in sales, particularly in business for yourself, there are ebbs and flows. And I think it finally just got to me. And because I never really gave everything long enough time to really prosper, I had really deemed myself to be a failure. Okay. And so that was it for me. It wasn't anything detrimental or, you know, there was nothing horrific that had happened. This was totally a self-esteem issue, perhaps, not giving these ventures of mine enough time to really work, exiting out far way too soon. But at the same time, I had a young daughter to support, and I didn't feel like I had a lot of time in the world. And so because things were never working out for me, I had just deemed myself a failure, okay? And that just that was really the sinking ship. That was the sinking ship for me. I didn't want to go back to work. You know, once you get used to that freedom of you know, being out there on your own and making a living and working and making money, it's hard to go back, you know, to a 9-to-5 schedule or 8-to-5 schedule, whatever. And that's just not what I wanted to do. And the very thought of my having to do that was something that was very unpleasant. It was unpleasant to me.
I get the deeming yourself a failure, and I also get the impatience of starting something and wanting to see that immediate fruit, not realizing you need to till it for a while. And you sound like someone who's very talented and can multitask and do a lot of things. As you going to these doctors and counselors, were they able to tap into that, or that true source of the issue? Was that something you figured out on your own?
That was something that I figured out on my own. I mean, between 2000 and probably 2002, I had visited with a number of doctors, a couple of therapists, and, you know, they, to me, just were not getting, you know, to the source of the problem. I don't even think we ever talked about any of the things that led up to my being depressed, the sense of failure. These ventures that I had set upon, you know, I don't even think we ever got to that. There were several medications. You know, at that time there was, you know, medicines. This is when, like, Prozac, I think, was real, you know, had just come on the scene and was being very heavily used. Although I was never prescribed Prozac, I was prescribed some medicine. You know, I was like, well, I'm not taking this. I mean, I think too much. I live in my head too much. But this medicine you all are giving me, it has me not caring about anything. I don't want to think too much, but I want to care about something. So I had to go through a number of medicines like that. I finally found something that would let me exist and not be this kind of in this sadness and depression all the time. So that was one thing that helped, but the psychologist and the counseling, they never did. The other thing was, and the year that American Idol started, I was upstairs at my mother's home watching American Idol, and I had the Detroit news. I was watching it, and there was this huge ad for, I can't remember the program, but the lady's name was Lucinda Bassett. And it was a program for dealing with anxiety and depression. And I brought that program, and that was the first thing that began to make me believe that there was hope for me.
Just going to say, that's a powerful statement, right, because you're a believer, you love the Lord. Did you have a relationship with the Lord at that time?
Well, you know, here's the deal. I had been... I know God. I knew God at that time. I won't say that I've always had a really good relationship with him. At that time, religion, Christianity, and God was not, you know, it wasn't really at the forefront of my mind. You know, I was scared, but it was almost like I didn't even think to look to God. You know, I just really didn't even think to look to God. Not that I didn't believe, but I was in such a fog. It just never occurred to me that I never did look to God. Now, that being said, God is still the reason I'm here, okay?
Right.
Whether
right.
I saw
Absolutely.
Him out or not, okay? He saved
yes.
me. He washed over me as he has done my entire life, okay? Now, I was so oblivious that I might not have been able to, you know, go to God in prayer and ask him to, you know, please, you know, help me. He did it. He still did it. You know, and
awesome.
So, he still did it.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about your journey and exactly how
okay.
you became the whole woman that you are today.
Ooh, yeah. Lost touch with my soul. I had nowhere to turn. I had nowhere to go. Lost sight of my dream. I'd never make it through. I had no hope to hold on to. I thought I would break. I didn't know my own strength, and I crashed down and I tumbled, but I did not crumble. I got through all the pain. I didn't know my own strength. By my darkest hour, my faith kept me alive. I picked myself back up, hold my head up high. I was not built to break. I didn't know my own strength. Oh, found hope in my heart. I found the light to light my way out of the dark. Found all that I
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back, and we're having a great conversation with author and life coach Charita Cadenhead. And she really has been setting it up, sharing with us that, you know, she spent years in depression. It really stemmed around this issue of deeming herself a failure, feeling that she wasn't sufficient and that life was just not working, and she felt like she didn't want to live anymore, and at the same time fighting and struggling to live, doing the things like throwing the medication down the toilet and going to stay with mom. And when the Lord knows our heart, even when we're far away from him, he's so good at drawing us to himself. And so you're sharing this wonderful moment where you're just looking at television and something comes across for anxiety and depression. You order it, and you said that was the first mm-hmm. time that you really had hope that you could actually
yes.
beat this. So start us off from there and talk to us about how that started to look.
I was reading the Detroit News, and there was this full-page ad, and I'm looking at it now. It's Attacking Anxiety and Depression, and it was a series of 12 cassette tapes and a workbook, and so and also these affirmations, these cards, these affirmation cards that I would have to say. And so I would, you know, on the way to work and on the way home from work, I would listen to these cassette tapes. And, you know, at the end of every tape, there were these affirmations that I was beginning to say. And from the first tape that I listened to, I felt like there was hope for me. I really felt that there was, I began to, because in these tapes, not only is she talking, there are people that had gone through the program that had been in the same situation that I was in, as far as not my circumstance, but depression. Because when you don't know what depression is and nobody's ever talked about it with you, you think it's just you. And so here I was listening to these people on these cassette tapes talking about their experience with anxiety and depression, and they had all overcome that. I mean, to hear these people talking, you know, it was the first time that I felt like, okay, these are real people. They understand me. They understand my situation. They've been through it. I'm hearing their situations, which was, you know, some of them were kind of, you know, not crazy mental, but, you know, people being in fear of, you know, flying or being depressed because they felt like everybody in their family used them to some degree. And my case not being any worse than theirs, because to them, theirs is worse than everybody else's. But as bad as they thought their situation was, and it actually was, they got through it. And so that gave me hope for myself that I could get through it too. Now, that was, you know, a couple of years in the making, but I never, you know, even after I discovered that, I was still going to see doctors and taking medicine, and I still say, despite all those doctors, it was this anxiety program that tipped the scale to my recovery. Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And as you hinted at before the break, was that you know, God definitely had his hand on you, even in that moment where you weren't necessarily thinking about him. And even, to be honest, for you to go from an isolated state where you were by yourself, just you and your daughter, putting yourself with your mother was also a step in the right direction. Because a lot of us who are suffering with any type of emotional struggle, we hide it, right? We hide it well. And so you're in bed all day until the kids come home, and then you try to function while they're there until you put them to bed, and then the cycle starts over again. So, and sometimes, especially women with newborns, with the postpartum depression, sometimes husbands, your spouses are right there, and they don't see the signs because we're so good at masking. So taking yourself out of isolation is also a great part of it.
I just knew that I had to do something. I didn't have a strategy. I didn't have a plan. I thought I was doing the things that I thought I needed to do. When I decided to go home with my mother, I mean, I have relatives here where I live in Alabama, but when I decided to go home with my mother, my thinking was, okay, because my mother's there, my father's there, my siblings are there, you know, my first cousins and all that, I needed to go somewhere where I knew people genuinely loved me and cared about me unquestionably, okay? I just need to be around those people that really loved me unconditionally, and I don't care what I did or how terrible a person I could be, not that I was a terrible person, but these are people who generally have my best interests at heart. And although when I got home, I didn't, you know, it's not anything, it's not like anything me and my mother sat down and had this conversation, because I would say we probably don't have, you know, a close relationship like that. But just being in that space with her and my sister, you know, and so it really helped. All I knew was I just needed to keep moving forward doing something, whether I knew it was going to work or not. I didn't know what I needed to do. I just needed to keep doing something.
Indeed. So when did your relationship with the Lord firm up and become real? When did he become real to you, and how did that come about?
My daughter graduated from high school in 2002, and it was a couple of months before her graduation. I'm still, you know, and I always say with my depression, this is not the case with everybody, and it'll become clear what I mean when I explain this to you. I was sitting on my mother's porch one day, and I was telling myself all these bad things. Okay, you're never gonna find love. You're never gonna have a successful business. You're never gonna have work that you're going to find that's enjoyable. You're never this, you're never that. And then all of a sudden, God says, who told you that? Who told you that?
Nice audible voice, huh?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, heck no. That's not true, Sharita.
That definitely wasn't your voice. Because your voice was telling you were a failure and all of that. So, yeah, it wasn't coming from
you. But you know what? Yeah, I know God's voice even when it sounds like my voice. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I was telling me all those bad things. And God said to me, oh, no, where'd you get that from? And so it was, and that must have been around March or April that year. So when my daughter got home from school and that day, I said, when you graduate King High School in 2 months, we're going back to Alabama. Okay, we're going back to Alabama. That's it. You know, and it took me, you know, 2 years from the time that I moved to Detroit to come to that moment of clarity. You know, the God speaking to me in that moment saying, that just isn't true. And what's so funny is that, you know, my mother and I were sitting down talking. This was a year or so, about a year before that day on that porch. And I was saying these same kind of things to my mother, and my mother said the same thing. She said, Sharita, that's just not true. She said, Sharita, that's not true. Mm-hmm. But when you're depressed, you think that your perception is reality, but it's anything but reality. It's anything but reality. But you think, in my case, I thought because I talk, you know, I heard myself talk. I thought I was being logical. I was calling it as I saw it. But that I was saying just were not true. And so I always say the root of my depression was all the terrible things I said about myself to myself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, there's some people who say that our words have no creative power, but that actually goes against how words are even formed. Words can only be formed through creative power. When you think about it, a word is just a thought, and that signal, that energy is sent to the vocal cord, and then the mouth, the muscles there create the sound, and it comes out on air. So to create a word by itself is power, right? So, when you were saying all those things to yourself, you were just getting lower and lower and lower. But you said from the moment you plugged in that tape, the moment you started hearing hope, the moment you started seeing those affirmations, a challenge was laid down. It wasn't so much that there was an overnight shift, but there was a challenge that was laid down in your own mind that you had to now reconcile and say, okay, which way are we going
to go?
That's right. When we come back, we're going to hear exactly what God has done in your life and where you are now and how you are able to help other women through their journeys and to tell their own stories.
Do I have any worshipers in here tonight? Can you do me a favor? Can you stand up on your feet? I know you've been sitting all night. But come on, everybody that's at a table. Can you stand up on your feet in the balcony? Come on, everybody. We came to worship him tonight. So if you can you lift your voice and just make some noise? Come on, everybody. has come over me. Just let that rest in your soul. A wonderful change has come over me. Lord, a wonderful change has come over me. A wonderful change. Worshiping right here. Yes, Lord. Yes. Tell the Lord yes. Tell him yes. Yes to your will. Yes to your way. We don't want to be the same no more, God. We want a new beginning with you. We want a new beginning, God. Change our ways. Change our ways. Change our ways.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back with our guest, who is also author, co-author of a book called I Am Woman. And this book actually shares triumphant stories of 21 women on their journey. So how did you get involved with this project, and why were you passionate about doing it?
Well, I'm a Yekini Marie, which was the visionary author for the book. She has this, she's the founder of the I Am Woman Network, and I became a part of that network, I believe, in late 2014, early 2015. And so it was shortly after that that she had this vision for this book, and she was looking for authors to participate. Now, being what I did, when I signed up being a co-author, I had no idea what I was going to be writing about. I really didn't have any idea what I wanted to be writing about. I knew that I always loved to write. I love to journal, whether it's I have a blog. I remember being a young adult working as a receptionist, sitting at a desk writing poetry and short stories. And even back then, in the early to mid 80s, I always felt like I was going to write a book. And so this book was actually defined just by her vision as an empowerment book, a pain to power sort of book. And so that one story about my depression, I didn't want to tell it. I didn't really want to tell it, you know, because it wasn't something I really talked a whole lot about since my recovery. Maybe one or two people I've talked to about it in depth. The other thing was I was still holding on to, and this is something we didn't talk about, you know, and I didn't realize until this book, I didn't want to tell that story because there was a sense of shame attached to it, the depression, because I was this person that you know, people seemingly expected great things from. I was the one person that could do anything, you know. Ask Sharita, she'll tell you. Ask Sharita, she knows. If anybody can do it, Sharita can, you know. And so one day I was depressed, okay? That's a lot of pressure, you know, people thinking that you're superwoman. But so I didn't want to tell that story because I felt this sense of shame. But then I thought, you know what, the shame was really for me was during that depression, okay? And I didn't even realize that the shame no longer existed. And so
yeah, that's an important place to get to.
Yeah. And so once I realized that there was no more shame attached to that, and it hadn't been in the 14 years since I've been depressed, I sat down and wrote that story, and I turned it in. And so, you know, after I submitted the chapter, I basically didn't want to look at it anymore, okay, because I felt like you know, if I looked at it, I would want to change my mind and not tell it. And what story would I tell then? But at the same time, I also knew it was a story that needed to be told for other women who hadn't discovered the anxiety and depression program. They needed to know that there were other women out there just like them, and that if they were going through it, when they read this book or knew somebody who was going through it, they needed to know that they weren't alone and that recovery is possible. And so the title of my chapter in that book was called "I Had Determined My Worth as Zero." And, you know, it was my story of depression. Yeah. You know, anytime you think about, you know, you start thinking about, you know, what life would be without you, or thoughts of suicide, you've determined your value is not worth living. I mean, it becomes zero. And what, you know, and I remember, you know, when Robin Williams died, you know, and of course everybody loved Robin Williams, but the first thing in my mind was, oh my God, I know what it feels like to want to do that.
Right. I had a guest just last week who spent 9 years in a Thai prison, who was innocent of what he was accused of. But he was sharing that, you know, when you see people committing suicide around you, and that where you say, God, I understand why they did that. That is the most dangerous place, because once you understand it means it's very easy for you to go there, right? It's very easy. And even if you're speaking that sentence where you said that you valued your worth as zero, because I said that during my battle with this, that I felt that I wasn't worthy of the oxygen that I was consuming. So that's the mentality. That's the weight of the mentality of someone who's living in that depressed zone, that depressed
That's right. And when you consider the polarity between Robin Williams' life and my life, you know, it becomes very clear that this is not because it's a mental health issue. Let's just call it what it is. It's a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I live a middle class life, and Robin Williams had riches. You know, he was beloved. You know, he was funny. Everybody adored him. He had family who loved him. The world loved Robin Williams because he was such a kind soul. This is what we got from him. But there was this inner turmoil that he held on to as long as he could. He held out as long as he felt like he could until he couldn't take it anymore. And I felt so bad for him. I felt so bad that he got to that point where he felt he had to do that, because I knew what it was like to want to do it. Yeah.
Right, and that's where the question comes in that we all have to answer, and that is the question of what is success really? So going back to your statement of in the beginning when you said you deemed yourself to be a failure, here you were, a good mother, providing for your children. You weren't seeing any of those things because there was some standard in your head that you weren't living up to. And we all have them. And when you think about someone who could have accomplished, like you said, as much as Robin Williams did, but yet in his mind, in his own mind, what was success? And there is an enemy of our soul.
Right.
That's one level. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the very physical, neurological issues that are happening. And some that you have to really figure out what it is for yourself. For some people, it's a spiritual thing. For some people, it is trauma because of what you have experienced in your past.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it really is a physical, solely, purely chemical imbalance in your body. And I say it all the time on the show, your brain is an organ, like your heart and your kidneys and everything else. You don't want that feeling. You become
right.
It controls everything. So now,
as you
read this book, 21 Stories, that's a lot of women to get together and hear their voices. Mm-hmm. What are some of the resounding issues that you hear as a theme with us as women that we are battling?
Well, now, for this particular book, because none of us saw or read any of the other chapters until the book actually came out and we all got a copy during the launch day. I was surprised that there were two or three other stories of there of women talking about their stories of depression, okay, because, you know, looks can be very deceiving. You kind of, even your mouth still opens. Really, her? Really? She just looks like she has it going on, but you never know what's going on with a person. You just never really know what's going on with a person. You had stories of people being, I won't say too nice, but because they never knew how to say the word no, people sort of trample all over them, not in a, you know, a really bad way, but because they could never say no, you know, and always yes, they kind of use them up, okay? Yeah, stories of people of, you know, Yukini Maria again, who's a visionary author. I mean, she came from a life, and she's a minister now. She came of a life of being a stripper, you know, and a drug trafficker. So, you know, these are all women who, you know, transition. You know, and it's possible. It's possible that people can change their lives. That people can change their lives, and so that's the overriding thing there. People can change their lives. They have to want to do it, and they have to keep. If they don't know how to do it, they have to keep seeking out ways to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even going back to, I mentioned earlier on my book, Don't Give Up and Win, a Survival Guide to Renewed Virginity, is really designed for women who, or and men, to be honest, women and men, who have find themselves in a state of celibacy or abstinence the second time around, the unexpected time around after the divorce or separation or widowhood. And no one really talks to you because they feel like you should know what to do. But at the same time, you know, Casey Winans, who is the daughter of Daniel Winans from the Winans family, she was sharing how important affirmations were for her to say them, to look in the mirror and to say them and to renew her mind in this area, to talk to herself about herself, remind herself what the goals are and why they're important. And so it all trails back. And I'm so thankful that these women were able to come back and put these words together so that others can pick it up and read it and know. So now you call yourself, you're not only a life coach, but you call yourself the exit strategist. What does that mean? And if you were coaching me, like, what's your strategy?
Well, you know, that's kind of like triple fold, okay, for a number of reasons. I am an introvert, okay? For a long time, you know, like I didn't know I was depressed, for a long time I didn't know that I was an introvert. And I don't mind being an introvert. I just didn't know why I was appeared to be so different from other people, okay? When actuality, you know, I'm not, you know, introverts and extroverts are probably nearly on par, you know, 46, you know, to 54%. So part of being, and there's various types of introverts because we're not all alike. There are, you know, 16 personalities, eight of which are introverts, eight of which are extroverts. My particular personality type, you know, I can be rather quiet, okay, a lot of the time, unless you engage me, okay, in what I call meaningful conversations, which means I don't really do small talk very well, okay? Like I can't sit around with a bunch of girlfriends talking about, you know, just general stuff that doesn't add value to my life. It's kind of a difficult thing for me to do, okay? It's very easy for other people to do. So it takes a lot of effort for me to do something, okay? And so as a result, I lived a lot of my life in a comfort zone, okay? And so when I wrote this book and trying to find my niche, it all tied around introversion and comfort zone because I have to figure out – I do a lot of things that are directly are not in line with my personality type. So almost everything I want to do goes against my natural tendencies, okay? So I basically live in a comfort zone. If I don't figure out a way to do the things that I want to do, I will stay trapped in that comfort zone. And that's what the exit strategist is all about. Okay, doing the things that I really want to do, despite being uncomfortable doing them.
I like that. I think I need an exit strategist. You know, people around me, right, would never think that because they're looking at what they see me accomplishing, mm-hmm. but they don't know how many things in my head I actually want to do, right?
Oh, yeah.
The things that want to do. And that's what makes me think, gosh, you're not soaring like an eagle yet. You're still in chicken territory. You got to get up there, girl. You got to soar high.
Yeah.
But you know, to continue to break out of comfort zones,
mm-hmm.
let the Lord pull you into deeper waters, which He always
mm-hmm.
is trying to do. Right? This is what
mm-hmm.
He has. It's just an issue of leading the horse to the water and will the horse drink?
right.
So
exactly.
It's not exiting life, but it is exiting the comfort zone that you're in.
The comfort zone. And you know, even with depression, like I said, my depression, I directly relate that to things, the bad things and terrible things I would tell myself, to myself about myself. Comfort zone, same thing. Is that anticipatory anxiety that keeps you in that comfort zone? What you think it's going to happen. You've convinced yourself if you do this that it's not going to be received well, that you're going to make a fool out of yourself, that you're not used to doing this, so what makes me think I can, you know. So it's still that self-talk. And that really ties into something that, you know, you were saying earlier about words, okay, and something that I'm doing now because I'm collaborating my own book, and the title of this book is called One Word. Okay, and it's a book collaboration, and each co-author will select one word that has significant meaning in their life. That will be the title of their chapter, and in that chapter, they will talk about that word, what it means to them, how they feel when they think about that word, how is that word responsible for some action that they took or inaction that they didn't take. How does that word affect their decision making? How does it affect the people that are, you know, connected to them in this life, okay, in this world? And so, you know, I'm really excited about this book. I didn't want to do a pain of power book because you have a lot of people that they've got very interesting stories, but I just did a pain of power book. And I think there are a lot of them out there, and I think that people, you know, they want to read a different kind of book sometimes. And so
mm-hmm.
this book is about talking about these authors, one word, and it's really taking a look into how they think, like looking into their journal as they're writing about how their day was. You know, for example, my word is hope. You know, when I think of the word, and I'm talking in this book like I'm talking to you, and when I think of the word hope, I literally get chills just thinking about what that word means and what it means to people, okay? Especially since I know what it's like to be feel hope
about it. Yeah.
Okay? And so you talk about that word, And so you have to use some examples of things that happened in your life, but the main focus of these chapters is the word itself, because words, they matter. They affect us more than we realize. I want people to read this book and stop and think, you know, what single word has attached itself to your life? What words do you say to yourself that influences your decision? You know, because even in writing these chapters, not only did I learn more about me, I learned that I may not even know what hope was. Learn these words in elementary school, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you use them all these years, we're never going back and looking at the definition. And I'm like, really? Is that what hope is? Really? Well, I haven't gotten that element of it. I was thinking about two things. Joel Osteen the other day, about a month ago, I happened to catch his Sunday broadcast, and he was saying that, you know, the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. He said, we should stop teaching our children to say that. We should stop that. That's not true. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can't hurt you. And so not only do the words you can speak to yourself hurt you, but when it comes to raising children, you want them to teach them a language of love and not to hurt other people with their words, because they can be just as hurtful as sticks and stones as well. So that's one thing, talking about words. I just wanted to bring that up about this book. Yeah,
will your book be available?
We're still working on it. You know, we're going through a first draft. It's due in August. I'm anticipating that it will be available. Our target date is at least a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving is when we'd like to launch it, have our launch party and book signing. So we're projecting for, I'm projecting early November, and I just can hardly wait. When people read this book and finish reading this book, I don't want them to get up out of their chair. I want them to sit right there. And just think.
Well, that's what the word will do to you, right? That's what the word will do. The word has power. And so
word,
I thank you so much for sharing with us this evening. And I'm positive I'm going to have you back later on in the year, and we'll chat some more about the book and deeper things of what God has done and is able to do. But thank you so much for sharing with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate that.
It's been a real blessing. And so for those of you who are listening who thought you were all alone and that you were the only one who was going through those emotions, thinking those things, you're not. The Lord says there's nothing that is new under the sun. There's nothing that you're going through that is uncommon to man. We all experience these things on some level or the other. But what the answer is always the same. The first answer is Romans 10:9-10, that says, if we confess with our mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in our heart that God raised him from the dead, we shall be saved. And when we enter that relationship with God, he's able to do so much for us as his children. He can empower us from the inside to be able to hear his voice and to do great things in him. And then it's our turn to take the word and take words and use them as power to speak over our lives, our families, our finances, our situation, and to just stand still and see what God can do. Because I guarantee you, the words that say, I'm not worthy, I have no value, those words are not going to give you life. Those words are not going to keep you going. You need to change the script in your head. And that old script often wants to come back. But you are the one who has the ability to change that script. So until next week, I want you to continue to be your own best hero and to know that the greatest hero of all said that you are worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross.
And it reaches to the high.